it is entirely true that when we're up in the mountains doing these things, Washington, D.C. and all its problems seem far, far away like that in those moments. And it feels like if we could just do this more places, more often, we probably wouldn't be as worried about things.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that the pandemic taught me is that when things are so bleak and so distressing, it's the act of creating things that really just makes me feel that it's like the one way I can combat the closing darkness is to create things that then can reach other people and build that sense of community.
A little more light in the world.
Welcome to this edition of Echotones. I'm Joy LaClaire. Those voices you just heard were Kevin Brewston and Gretchen Minton of Montana Insight Theater talking about the upcoming Sonnets in the Snow, which, since the beginning of the COVID pandemic, by popular demand in this 2024 winter season, has become an annual event in the Gallatin Valley. Sonnets in the Snow will happen on February 17th and 18th, and it starts at the Blackmore Trailhead up in Hyolite Canyon. One can ski, snowshoe, or walk this groomed trail. The figure eight configuration of the loop makes it an ideal location to easily encounter their green-sashed sonneteers and ask them to deliver a sonnet to you. One can hear poetry from Seamus Heaney, Mary Oliver, Shakespeare, Christina Rossetti, Robert Frost, Elizabeth Barrett Browning, Dylan Thomas, Edmund Spenser, Elizabeth Bishop, and more. We spoke with Gretchen Minton and Kevin Brewston about Sonnets in the Snow on February 7th, 2024, in our Beyond the Deep End studios. Welcome to Echotones in our newly remodeled Beyond the Deep End studios, Gretchen Minton and Kevin Brewston. And thank you for braving this recent snowfall to come here.
You're welcome. It's very encouraging to see it snowing for what the show we're going to be putting on.
Exactly. And I should let listeners know that neither of you is a stranger to the KGVM airwaves. Kevin, you've actually produced programs over the years informing our listeners about various theater experiences happening in the area. And Gretchen, there are at least four programs featuring you and your work on our KGVM.org archives. And this snow is actually pertinent, as you were just saying, Kevin, to what we're going to be speaking about, namely what has now become the annual Sonnets in the Snow event organized by Montana Insight Theater that will be happening on February 17th and 18th. Tell us more about this.
Well, what we do is we gather sonneteers, and these are our actor performers, and we gather in the Blackmore Trail Loop, the cross-country trail loop in Hyolite Canyon, and our actors deliver sonnets, or sometimes they're not proper sonnets, but short poems. And they'll be skiing around the loop, and then the audience skis or walks the other direction. And every time a performer and an audience member intersects, the sonneteer will deliver a particular poem. And it's a great opportunity for people to get out in the woods and in the snow and get some exercise, and then stop along the way to hear a variety of poetry. So it's all very open and free-flowing. And this is now going to be the fourth time we've done this show, and audiences always ask us every year, when is Sonnets in the Snow going to happen? Because it's, I think, quickly become a community favorite.
Now, I understand that this is a very creative response to what many experienced as a tragedy, namely the pandemic, the COVID pandemic. Tell us about this origin story.
It began with a performance that we did. Actually, the first roots of it would start in 2019 with an adaptation of one of Shakespeare's plays that Gretchen did called, it was an unknown Shakespeare play called Timon of Athens. And it was, Gretchen did an adaptation called Timon of Anaconda, setting this in Anaconda and Butte. And we did two outdoor productions of that, one here and one in Butte. And having done that in 2019, in September of 2019, that gave us the groundwork of and the hunger of doing more outside shows. And as we were doing that, Gretchen kept talking about, boy, wouldn't it be nice to do something on our mountain trails? We should do a play. We should do these on the mountain trails around here. We're surrounded by nature. And So many people like to be outside. So that's the background.
You're right, though, that it was in the spring of 2020 when all theater performing arts shut down. We were talking to a lot of our performer friends, and we thought, you know, everyone really needs art and community now more than ever. There was so much isolation and there was so much fear in 2020 during the pandemic. And then we thought, how can we really let people gather safely and still experience the joy of performing arts? So that's what enabled us to think a little bit more about how we could do this outdoor walking production. And so we did something in Story Mill Park that was called Shakespeare's Walking Story. And we had little audience pods of just 10 people. They were guided through Story Mill Park. And in each of 6 different places, there was a lone actor who would deliver a soliloquy. And in this case, they were all from Shakespeare, and they were all about one type of imprisonment or another. And we thought that so many people were feeling imprisoned in their lives, in their homes and such during the pandemic. This gave them a chance to hear the words of Shakespeare performed outside in a way that they could really connect with the words and the history, but also with their community and with the natural environment. And that really showed us that having these outdoor walking productions was an exciting way to do art. And so we didn't want to stop doing this in the winter. And I said, well, we love to cross-country ski. Let's see if this can work out on the trails too. And just keep people moving and getting the opportunity to hear poetry in the snow.
One of the things I would just like, a little fun anecdote, I think, that corresponds in a strange way with this first season, the first Shakespeare's Walking Stories, was that 400 years earlier, in the time of Shakespeare, the theater was often closed in Shakespeare's years because of plague and political reasons and things like that, too. So the people in Shakespeare's time were often suffering from a lack of ability to go out and see theater as well. So here we are, 400 years later, in a sense, unintentionally recreating the similar situation.
And Gretchen, your work over the years and also teaching at MSU, well, first of all, it's documented how Shakespeare has been present in Montana as long as Europeans have been here. Not everybody knows that. I think people are delighted when they are intrigued when they find that out from your work. But that also brings us to this upcoming production. Mm-hmm. Of, what's it called?
Born with Teeth.
Now that's the Bozeman Actors Theater.
Correct.
With whom you are also associated,
yes.
Kevin.
Yes.
Tell us about that, because what you were just saying about the history and the analogs.
Yes, yes. So Born with Teeth is a new play written by Liz Adams Duffy. It premiered, I believe it was in 2022, I think it was. And we're like the third or fourth place in the country to perform this play. As it turns out, the play is set with a young William Shakespeare and a young Christopher Marlowe being commissioned to write a cycle of history plays. And it turns out Henry VI Part 3 that they were writing for this play. Recent scholarly research indicates quite strongly that they probably did collaborate on this play. So Liz Adams Duffy, when she heard this news just several years ago, said, oh, can you imagine what a play this could be about these two people who were both very impressive writers, some of the greatest writers of English drama and literature of their time,
of all time.
Of all time, actually, yes. So she wrote this play about them, and it's set against the time of the twilight years of Elizabeth I's reign, and she was paranoid. Religion persecution was a big issue, Catholics and Protestants, and also she had no heirs, so there was a lot of struggling behind the scenes for primacy following her death. So this play is set against that backdrop in which saying the wrong words would land somebody in prison or worse, execution. And the playwrights were some of the leading people being arrested as well, too. So it's a fascinating look at an imagined conversation they would have had as they would write this play. Gretchen's a dramaturg for this play as well, too.
Yeah, just to say that it is a really exciting work because it is historical, but it's also imaginative, and it gets at this idea of collaboration, but also rivalry, because in the early 1590s, Marlowe was much more famous than Shakespeare. So it really plays up this rising star of Marlowe and this slower rising star of Shakespeare and what the relationship, mm-hmm, between the two of them might have been. And Marlowe was actually tragically killed in a bar in 1593. And so this play happens just before his untimely death. And many scholars have wondered, if Marlowe hadn't died so young, what would the rest of his career been like? And we always joke about, you know, I would be teaching classes in Marlowe rather than in Shakespeare, maybe, because he was incredible. And this play is witty, and it's imaginative, and it's just a two-actor play, and it really makes you feel like a voyeur into this Elizabethan-era writing process.
We like to joke that if Marlowe had not died young, we would perhaps be celebrating Marlowe in the parks instead of Shakespeare in the parks.
Or maybe we could share.
Yes, exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
Kevin, you write for Bozeman Magazine, and your piece from February 1st about Born with Teeth was very interesting. And listeners can find a link to that in the archived edition of this on kgvm.org. One of the things that intrigued me about what you wrote, and you alluded to it a little bit just now, many of us are feeling overwhelmed about how the culture is changing and the pandemic and technology is changing, and we don't feel as if we have stability under our feet. And some of us, at least, and I'm guilty of this, think it's unique to our period of history because things were slower back then. But as you point out in your piece, and I wonder if you would read it so it'll be in your voice, just talking about the turnover of religions.
England at the time of Shakespeare and Marlowe was ruled by Queen Elizabeth I, a daughter of King Henry VIII. This was a time of great religious persecution across Europe. In the course of only a few years, England had gone from Catholicism to Protestantism, back to Catholicism, and then once more back to Protestantism during Elizabeth's reign. In addition to religious persecution, England, in particular, was on edge due to Elizabeth's advancing age and her lack of a natural heir. Those near the crown were making power plays to set themselves or their families up for grabbing power when Elizabeth died. Playwrights walked a very narrow line to avoid writing something that might be termed heretical by whoever was currently in power. Shakespeare and Marlowe, well aware of this fine line, wrote carefully so as not to offend.
I just find that so resonant to our current political situation in the United States with the cultural and political polarities, the fear elected officials are going through. Candidates have to have extra Secret Service protection.
Yes, I agree completely. I thought of that a lot. When I first heard of this play, I jumped on it right away because I thought about all these similarities, because we are now in a time of seemingly increasing authoritarianism and tyrannical rule, perhaps. I mean, everybody feels like that's at risk now, and that's very much similar to what they were experiencing at that time as well, too. So I thought it would be really interesting to explore that idea with this play.
And the other thing that I would add to that is the play makes it very clear that Elizabethan England was a police state. There were spy networks everywhere, and Shakespeare in particular in this play is very paranoid that there could be someone listening to them, because Marlowe himself was a spy. And there's this sense of who's listening and how is that going to get you into trouble. And I think now that we realize that our phones are listening to us all the time and that there's constant surveillance, cameras everywhere, there's that lack of privacy, and we wonder, can our innermost thoughts and political feelings and all of that, is that going to come back in order to get us into trouble at some point? It's like, you know, the fear of the police state, I think, is something that's really, really relevant. I mean, the most recent Booker Prize novel, Prophet Song, was about Ireland descending into a police state in exactly these ways.
And increasingly, too, we're doing this to ourselves by using our social media and this sense that all filters are off. I'm just writing this little text to this person. But we don't know, once we commit that text to the airwaves, we don't know where it goes. And it does come back to haunt us and bite us. So that's not dissimilar from what they were finding about being overheard in a pub or on the street.
So listeners who want to see Born with Teeth, how can they go about doing that?
So tickets are available online on our box office online. Go to Bozeman Actors Theater, bozemanactorstheater.org. They can go online to that. and buy tickets online there, or they can buy them at the door, too, until they're sold out. Yes.
I personally appreciate that both of your websites use the R-E ending on theater.
Yes.
That's how I was taught.
Okay.
And I have had to learn to do the E-R.
Yes, yes.
But it's not natural to me.
I always did E-R until I met Gretchen. She converted me.
I just think of R-E as more proper. Of course, they're both fine, but I think I prefer R-E as well, and I only spell it E-R if a publisher makes me.
Well, back to Sonnets in the Snow. What should listeners know in order to participate?
Our website, which is montanainsighttheater.org, and the insight is I-N-S-I-T-E, because we do site-specific theater. There, if you look under current production, it will explain a little bit more about the production, and you can also, there's a little link where you can sign up for a spot. But just the important thing to realize is that this is not the kind of event that has one specific start time. We will be there between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. on both the 17th and the 18th of February. Audiences can show up whenever they want. They can ski, they can walk, they can snowshoe, go at their own pace. And so there's no wrong way to do it. You can just show up when you want, stay as long as you want. And also the other important thing is that it is entirely free. This is just the donated time of our actors. We do accept tips for our actors so that at least they can get some gas and food money. But this is just an opportunity to get out with some friends at your own pace. But we do ask, if possible, for you to sign up just so we know how many people to expect and so we can email you with a few more details of the event right before it happens.
And on the montanainsight.org website is a form that they can use to communicate with you about their
Correct.
Intention.
Correct.
Yeah,
yep.
It just says how many people are in your group and which day you intend to come.
Do you have a good idea of how many, what do we call them?
Yes.
Sonneteers?
Yeah, we do call them sonneteers.
Okay.
We have 14.
And, oh, of course.
Yeah, isn't that great? Yeah. And most of them will be on skis and delivering poems. And as I said, they're not all proper sonnets. And they don't just include older poetry by Shakespeare or even by 19th century people, such as Christina Rossetti. They also include poetry by more recent writers, such as the great favorite Mary Oliver. I think right now Mary Oliver's poems are resonating with everybody. And so they're two of her poems. Are among our offerings this year. And we also have a painter, the plein air painter, Aaron Scher, who is quite well known in this area. He always paints on site and also writes his own poetry to accompany the painting. And we have one of our sonneteers, Eric Pearson, will be doing his own musical singing of Shakespeare's Sonnet 30.
Along with Susan Miller, who will be accompanying him.
That's right. They're going to be doing a duet. And then finally, violinist Carrie Krause is going to be playing and accompanied by the dancer Genevieve Trigstead Burke. Many of you probably know their famous work last year when they were on several of mountain peaks around the area. And they thought that winter was not a deterrent. So they're going to be joining us just for Saturday. So if you want to see Carrie and Genevieve, Saturday is the day to go.
It'll be interesting to see what Genevieve is wearing, because on the mountain peak she was wearing this diaphanous.
Yes, that's right.
Probably not going to in the winter, but
I wouldn't be surprised. These are intrepid young women and very talented.
Yes.
Well, and I also want to see what dancing on skis really looks like.
Right. We heard,
or maybe
she's
snowshoes.
Yeah, who knows?
Right.
I would like to see her go on point on her skis, right?
Yeah, that would be something.
We're excited about all this.
Yes. Well, I'm excited to have heard about it in time to inform my listeners. And on the montanainsighttheater.org website, there are some videos, snippets of past Sonnets in the Snow, which are interesting.
Yes.
And I noticed there was somewhat of an age range of the sonneteers. Is that going to be true this year?
Yes, it is. Our son, Luke Minton, who is 14 going on 25, is going to be doing some
poetry by J.R.R. Tolkien.
And he's the youngest. He's done this a couple other times before as well.
In the past, we've had John Hosking, and he may or may not come. He hasn't committed because he's finishing out his run of Carousel. But John may join us, which is always a pleasure. And so, yes, we will definitely have an age range of sonneteers and also of audience members, because sometimes people come and bring their kids, and sometimes older people are out for their weekend exercise, and this is really something that's appropriate and available to everybody.
People should just come to the Blackmore Trailhead, because that's where our first sonneteer, which will be Aaron, will be set up usually in the parking lot. And then they get pointed in the right direction to go after they have their time with him, hear his sonnets.
And one can do as many or as few
yes.
as...
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gretchen, I wanted you to talk about the environmental aspect of your work and Montana Insight Theater's work, because I think it's, well, possibly not unique, but it is an aspect that is different from what many people consider theater.
Yeah, thank you for that question, because really my passion right now is finding ways to use Shakespeare and other playwrights and poets in order to speak to what I think is the most pressing concern of our day, which is the climate crisis, environmental degradation, and everything that goes along with it, such as air quality, water quality, species extinction, environmental justice, all of that. And what's always been interesting for me as a Shakespeare scholar is to look back at the late 16th and early 17th century and to realize that people at that time, including Shakespeare, understood that something was changing because of the way that people were using their environment without checks and balances. So they chopped down all their trees, for instance. They had started to burn coal for fires, so they were starting to have acid rain. There was a lot of pollution in their waterways, and there was also a lot of volatile weather at the time. So there are many moments in Shakespeare's plays that really get at the beginnings of what we have come to call the Anthropocene. And laying on that foundation, I found it really exciting and interesting to audience members to say, look, this started 400 years ago, or maybe more, and how can we use these stories and adapt them and retell them in order to speak to the much more pressing and serious issues we're facing today? And so what I find is that Shakespeare's a great collaborator, like back to the Shakespeare-Marlowe collaboration. I sometimes feel like I'm collaborating with Shakespeare and with these voices of the past to say, what was your wisdom about your situation and your environment? How can we use that and adapt that further to help people see things a little bit differently? And when we do theater outdoors, I just think rather than being in an air-conditioned plush seat, you know, environmentally controlled and shut off when you see theater, why not open up theater to be outside so you can hear the birds, so that you can feel the earth beneath your feet, so that you can breathe in that beautiful oxygen that the trees are giving you, and think about, why do I have these gifts? What does it mean to be part of a vibrant ecosystem? And when I hear these words that have been penned by humans, how is that relationship between nature and culture just always invariably and inextricably linked? And I think that that helps us come alive, have a fully embodied experience that maybe can help us do better in the future.
And we in Montana are actually making history with the Held v.
Yes.
Montana case that our children led.
Exactly.
And is inspiring others all around the world.
That's right.
I just want to focus on one example of an event that you created in the past, Shakespeare for the Birds.
Mm-hmm.
Share with our listeners about that.
So Shakespeare for the Birds was in June of 21. So it was the second walking production that we did in Story Mill Park. And we knew we wanted to return there, and we knew we wanted to do something sort of environmental oriented. And I guess we should give some credit to Luke here, too.
Yes, so our son Luke.
Our son, who's always been interested in biology, during the pandemic, like many people, started finding himself a bird lover. Right? We all took these walks and noticed the birds more, and there were more birds in the backyards, and people were staying home more. And he developed this complete love of birds and wanted to be an ornithologist, and he was setting up bird feeders, and he got us more interested in them. And then I was thinking, wait a minute, there's been so much talked about with Shakespeare and his references to birds.
Of course you went there.
Yeah, of course, because that's the way I think, right?
That's right.
You think of famous scenes like in Romeo and Juliet, where they're talking about, are you hearing the nightingale or the lark? And there's so many references to swans, and Shakespeare, of course, is the sweet swan of Avon. And there are references to birds of prey, like the famous kites, but songbirds, and then also the famous mimicking bird, the starling. And the story goes that in the 19th century, there was one man who introduced all of the Shakespeare birds he could get his hands on into Central Park in New York because he wanted Shakespeare's birds to be in North America. That is, in fact, why starlings are in North America and, of course, become a problematic invasive species. So that story, anyway, whether it's true or not, was a really inspiring way for us to think about how does Shakespeare use birds? What do we think of birds in our own environment? In Story Mill Park with the bird feeders where you can sit there in the bird blind and you can look at these birds feeding. And, you know, a bunch of people who came to that production were really bird enthusiasts from the Audubon Society here. It was a great kind of meeting of the bird enthusiasts and the Shakespeare poetry enthusiasts who were walking together and looking at the birds and hearing Shakespeare's words about those birds. And again, it was nature and culture and community all coming together in Story Mill Park.
Well, it's a wonderful collaboration and use of our famous outdoor venues in a different way than they're usually used, in a very creative way. I wonder if you have a favorite Shakespeare sonnet and if you would share it with us.
We often have actors staying with us, too. We have one right now, actually. So it's not uncommon. We have people reciting poetry and reciting pieces and things like this. So reading poetry is not uncommon for us to do things like this.
I guess I'll do When in Disgrace with Fortune in Men's Eyes, because that's the one I have memorized, but I will actually read it to make sure. I am a big fan of Sonnet 29. When in disgrace with fortune and men's eyes, I, all alone, beweep my outcast state, and trouble deaf heaven with my bootless cries, and look upon myself and curse my fate, wishing me like to one more rich in hope, featured like him with friends possessed, desiring this man's art and that man's scope with what I most enjoy contented least. Yet, in these thoughts myself almost despising, haply I think on thee. And then my state, like to the lark at break of day arising from sullen earth, sings hymns at heaven's gate. For thy sweet love remembered such wealth brings, that then I scorn to change my state with kings.
Let's reprise the Sonnets in the Snow information for our listeners, what they need to know to get there.
Yep, the nuts and bolts are it's the 17th. And the 18th, Saturday and Sunday of February, starting at 11 o'clock until about 1 o'clock. We'll have sonneteers out on the trails during that time frame. It'll be the Blackmore Loop. It's a groomed trail. We like to have people start at the Blackmore Trailhead, up Highlight Canyon, and they can walk, they can ski, they can snowshoe, however they want to traverse. It's completely free of charge.
And just go to our website, MontanaInsectTheater.org, and sign up for a spot. Just there will be a form there that will, under current production, and you can let us know your name, your contact information, and how many people in your party.
The other thing I would add to all of that is if people at the last moment decide they would like to go, they can still show up anyway. We prefer that they sign up so we have some sense about what's going on. Also, so if the weather suddenly changes, we can say, oh, we can't do this. We can let them know. But if people want to just come up and show up, that's fine, too. This is a great way to get the word out to people.
It's just like an extension of what you're already doing, which is bringing joy to the community and catharsis, I dare say. we all need that.
Well, it is entirely true that when we're up in the mountains doing these things, Washington, D.C. and all its problems seem far, far away like that in those moments. And it feels like if we could just do this more places, more often, we probably wouldn't be as worried about things.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that the pandemic taught me is that when things are so bleak and so distressing, it's the act of creating things that really just makes me feel that it's like the one way I can combat the closing darkness is to create things that then can reach other people and build that sense of community.
A little more light in the world.
Yeah, and so that's why my work as a professor is becoming more and more kind of creative, because I think, am I going to reach more people writing an esoteric article about Shakespeare that 30 scholars are going to read, or by putting sonneteers in Highlight Canyon that 100 people are going to experience in their weekend reveries.
Right,
and
right.
So it's like, this is what matters to me increasingly.
Well, you've paid your dues academically, so is there less pressure on you to do those academic papers?
Yeah.
Are you tenured?
I've been a full professor for a decade now. So I can kind of do what I want. And MSU is very understanding and very open to the kind of work that I and my colleagues want to do. So creative work is important in English, just like it is in music and art and other things like that. It's especially the outreach component. So yeah, I can do what I want, but I'm still writing academic papers too. Sort of kicking and screaming these days.
But, yeah, you know. Not as much as you used to. But she has a contract now with Bloomsbury Publishing to do the Henry V book updates in their fourth series then too. And so, but she's doing a critical edition of that. And yes, it's not exactly something you look forward to every day, getting up and doing that text edit, which she could be doing, creating things like this.
And creating things that talk about the environment.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I want to do all the time.
Yeah, but she's good at textual editing. She's very good at it.
Well, Gretchen Minton and Kevin Brewston, thank you so much for joining us today on Echotones and for the wonderful work that you've done over the years, bringing tremendous art to our community.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Yes.
You have just heard a conversation with MSU English professor, playwright, and dramaturg Gretchen Minton and Kevin Brewston, board member of the Bozeman Actors Theater and co-founder and producer of Montana Insight Theater. You can find out more by going to montanainsighttheater.org and bozemanactorstheater.org. An ecotone is a transition zone between two biomes. It's where two communities meet and integrate. This program, Ecotones, explores the variety and diversity of the Greater Gallatin Valley community and beyond, offering the echoing tones as our communities influence and are influenced by each other, bridging limits and boundaries and celebrating diversity. Ecotones is a Beyond the Deep End production, recorded and produced by Joy LaClaire in Bozeman, Montana, for broadcast on KGVM Bozeman and archiving at kgvm.org. We thank you for your support of your community radio station, Gallatin Valley Community Radio.